thank you for the invitation to speak, the opportunity to do a little bit of service, pay it a tiny bit back out of what has been given to me so freely. My name is Susan. I'm a marijuana addict. I am grateful, recovering person in 12-step programs. I started my recovery journey before I ever went to my first 12-step meeting, which was an AA meeting. But I think there's a term, and I'll say that I love MA, but I kind of identify as a person who follows AA more because I've done the steps through the big book and had sponsor in AA. Even though alcohol was never my thing, I just felt at home at those meetings. And I didn't know about the MA phone line for a while, and the in-person meetings is what I really needed at the beginning. But before the beginning was the pre-beginning, which was meditation. My bottom hit at a point where I realized that I was being targeted by the local gang in Venice, California, where I had lived for a few decades, and had done what everybody in Venice, California does, which is smoke pot and drink. I would drink just because other people were drinking, even though it wasn't my thing. I never drank to excess. I didn't really like drinking, but it had become part of my just being somebody a lot more free than I thought people who had 9-to-5 jobs were, and trying to identify with the local folks and be cool. But I had gotten mixed in with folks who were really comfortable with a lifestyle that I didn't even know anything about, much less was comfortable with it, and became sort of their patsy and was being used, and started figuring it out and started seeing it, and was pretty terrified, and realized one of the things that they do is drug you. Believe it or not, I met the guy who actually facilitates this. He studied African blow darts, and he's a woodworker, and he's very skilled, and I think he himself has habits and addictions that maybe they help him keep up with, and his payment to them is to make these blow darts, which they, I don't know the particulars of it, but I actually did see the compound once written in his workshop. They will drug you and make you look crazy, and everybody will start telling stories about you in the town, and this is how they run you out. They make you look like you're an insane person. It's gaslighting to the extreme. And all of that was just horrifying and terrifying, and I'd heard the stories about this happening before it ever happened to me. And they're so weird and bizarre and implausible that I never believed them. And then they started happening to me. So I can see why other people thought that I was crazy. And sometimes people would say, you know, you sound crazy, right? And I'd say, yep, I know. And I'm sure you're supposed to say that because here you are saying it. So I sought some kind of help, and the 12-step program AA had been in my mind. People had said that to me, you know, you really need to quit smoking, and I knew that, but I knew somebody that smoked just as much, if not more, than I did, which was every 5 minutes, all day, every day, for years and years and years straight, like it was no big thing. And he called himself sober because he quit doing, I guess, harder drugs and alcohol, and he did that through AA. So I spent maybe a year or so not going into any kind of program because I didn't think that they would accept somebody who just had marijuana as a habit. And one day at the lowest point, I had probably been sleep deprived for maybe 6 or 7 days. It's part of the drug concoction that they blow dart you with. And I I knew I couldn't sleep. You can't sleep. You kind of go out of your mind. You try to think your way out of this situation. I tried to think my way out of this situation, and I couldn't. And I called the one person I knew who didn't live in Venice, California, who I hadn't really ever befriended. We had a very cool, interesting click. Called him like at 5 in the morning, and he answered, and he could tell I was seriously in trouble, distressed, and he came to help me. And one of the things he did, I mean, he just was already deeply surrendered to a spiritual path at that point in his life. And it was kind of his first dip into that kind of thinking and living. And he was loving it. His mind was blown with this spiritual path he was on. And he let me come and stay at his apartment, which was one town over in Santa Monica, not Venice. And he cooked for me, and he owned his own professional sports massage storefront company with several employees, and he did professional body work on me. He basically healed me. He was a healer. He was a Reiki healer. He was a Reiki master. And he invited me to go with him to his meditation teacher, to this lineage of people who have been meditating together for 5,000 years, just passed down from teacher to teacher to teacher to teacher. And in that room, I found what you hear people say in 12-step rooms, they have what I want. These people have what I want. None of them looked insane. None of them were crazy. None of them even knew about people like the kind I had been associating with, much less were being traumatized and terrorized by them. And I said, okay, I want what these people have. I want this peace. I want stability. I want relationships with people that are sane. I want a home. I want safety. I want happiness. They're all happy. And one of the requirements to join this lineage was no abusing substances. And I said, okay, and looking back on all this, I recognize all the little elements. If I got turned down the wrong way because my thinking was AA wouldn't accept me because I was really just an MA person and I didn't know MA existed. Okay, they gave me this thing that really was so beautiful and so alluring and such a promise of a life that could happen and could happen for me. And one of the requirements was no substance abuse. And I'm like, okay. So I did 4 months, what they call white knuckling. It didn't feel like white knuckling because I actually had somebody really just parenting me, really just healing me and letting me take full advantage of their beautiful food and body work and healing and all of that, completely platonic. And something went really screwy in my apartment with the other neighbors. I was furious. Our building got infested with bed bugs, and nobody else would admit to it. I knew who where it had started. It wasn't me, but nobody else would even cop to that it was happening. Which would have been, if we all had copped to it, or if two or more of us had copped to it, we could have got the building tented and the landlord would have been obligated to take care of it. But nobody else was doing it. I was the only one being open about it, saying, hey, I've got bed bugs coming up through the floor, so it's got to be somebody below me. And there was somebody running their heat, which is how they make bed bugs run away. And I was just, one night I was furious because I couldn't sleep. I had the music on, but low. Nobody could hear it but me. And I'm sitting out on my balcony, and somebody called the cops on me because I was up and awake and on my balcony. No lights on, nothing like that. And I was just furious. And I've heard this expression in meetings before, and it's like, I drank at them or I smoked at them. So I smoked at them. I'm like, fuck you in my head. Here's a fuck you in my pocket for you and all of you. None of you guys are doing anything that works for all of us together. You're all on your own individual trips. Here's me on my individual trip. And I smoked. And that was after 4 months of abstinence. And I thought, okay, obviously I don't have this on my own. I guess I will go to one of those programs. So I walked through the door at my first AA meeting, and I was really scared because I didn't think I would belong. I'm not an alcoholic, I don't think. But in hindsight, maybe I would have been if I'd kept going. I don't know. Maybe I had a very high alcohol bottom, but I certainly had a super low marijuana bottom. That was not a question. And I'm backtracking here. I think this was before I went into my first meeting. This is when I first heard somebody said you need to get to an AA meeting. I had gone to a social worker when all of the craziness started happening to me, the things that they do to run you out of town. And this social worker said, I have 5 other patients with your same story. That saved me. That sentence saved me because I already knew on my own what was happening, and I didn't want to try to prove it too hard to other people, because that's when they said, well, you're crazy, which was the desired outcome of the gangs. So I didn't really try too hard, but I went to the social worker to tell her, and she already believed me because she'd already heard it 5 times before me. So that saved me. I was not being alone saves a person in our shoes, I think. Connection is the opposite of addiction. So I had connection right there. She understood something that other people weren't going to understand. She sent me to talk to some mental health people, some counselors, and one of those people there suggested, maybe you need to get to a 12-step program, maybe AA. And I said, but I only smoke marijuana. She goes, let me ask you this. Is your life unmanageable? And I mean, she knew the answer. I for sure knew the answer. And I'd almost heard that question before. It seemed really familiar. And I said, well, hell yeah, it's unmanageable. She goes, then AA is going to help you. I said, okay. And I walked through the doors of my first AA meeting and was scared, thinking I'm going to get laughed out of there by people who definitely know that they might die if they drink again. I didn't know that I would die if I smoked again. I didn't think I would. So it's a different degree of non-functioning life, but I for sure had it. And thankfully, I had a young lady who was the chairperson of that meeting say to me, some old timers might say you don't belong here, but just don't listen to them. Just stay. Just keep coming back. You're okay. We'll accept you. Thankfully, I heard that. And that was the first meeting I ever attended. And at the end of it, a couple of people walked out afterwards and said, there's a thing called MA. And I'm like, all right. So things were happening. And I want to get into the gifts of the program, and forgive me, but my gifts all have the verbiage of the Big Book and AA and their little sayings. One of them that I love is principles before personalities. That really stuck with me. The 12-step program is to break your ego down such that a person who is addicted is no longer the victim of their ego. I already had a program running. I had the program of addiction. I had the program of being a slave to my ego and my reactions, my impulses. And I'm being taught a different program to replace that. And putting principles before personalities, that was a very valuable thing for me to hear. Because I was being taught principles that I never even thought about. Honesty, integrity, compassion, spirituality, justice. All those things that I'm listening to people that I can see have saved their own lives by doing this, I'm saying, okay, I'm hanging on to them like they're lifelines. I'm like, okay, these are things I have to take for real and deep into my soul, and all the other stuff doesn't matter. All this thinking my way out of a program is completely nothing compared to these salvation principles. So when things like the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, when those things get read, I listen to them like gospel, and I want to abide by them like gospel. I don't play loose with those things, because those things were going to save my life. I knew they were, and they did. And how it works today is when probably those of you who have more than just an hour or two, it isn't that life gets easier once we get recovery going. Life is still as hard as it is. We just have better tools to deal with it. We have untapped resources that we are now tapping and able to deal. So instead of spending my energy trying to avoid the things I don't want to happen in my life, I still don't want things like hurricanes to hit my house and neighbors to encroach on my lawn with their landscaping and legal battles and paying taxes. I don't want to do all that stuff, but I have resources now to deal with it. And the biggest one of all is the framework of a higher power. The idea that, to me, it's self-evident truth, that there's something that created this material world that is definitely not me and probably has, what I want to say, a presence that isn't necessarily of this material world. And I also share that same presence with it. I think of it as energy, frequency, vibration. I will also call it universe, but honestly, I think universe is a sort of a vision of a material thing inside of that. There's an energy field of existence, of being, in my mind. This is how I see it. And that thing can have the frequency of love and compassion and the vibration of omnipotent intelligence, and it can do things like create worlds and matter. I mean, you know, we our physical bodies are created out of matter, but each atomic part of each molecule, each subatomic molecule, there's definitely more space between the elements that make up matter than there is the actual stuff of matter itself. And so I really have started recently identifying with the space. And that's where I think my higher power is also. And it just generates matter for, I don't know why, its own amusement. To me, it's pretty, the absolute of art, the absolute creator has created stuff called matter. And who knows what else? Maybe stuff beyond anything a human could imagine. Having been given the task in a 12-step program to find out what higher power would be for me, and being given the utter freedom of people saying, nobody else gets to tell you what it is. It will never be wrong. Whatever you come up with is not wrong. The closer you get to what it is for you, is the more right it is, because you have to rely on whatever it is that you conceptualize as higher power. I have to rely on whatever it is I conceptualize as higher power to save me when life is at its hardest, in my experience. And I have had even harder experiences than what was going on when I hit my bottom. But they didn't hit like that. They didn't land like the hardest thing I've ever been through. They landed like, oh, isn't this an interesting grad school I'm in right now? The grad school of deeper surrender, of deeper acceptance, immediate, full, 100%, 1,000% acceptance, no whining, no complaining, no wishing it away, no wanting to commiserate with other people that it is this way, accepting that it is, and watching and observing the transformation that goes on in my being from the person who wants to kick and scream to the one who just surrenders, watches, and adapts and watches themselves grow and pick up even finer tools and longer resilience and deeper patience, like breaking bones and having such a severe, you know, broken body that it takes a good, long, slow healing year to recover from that. That was interesting to watch. It was, you know, pain and uncomfortable and sleepless and doing all that while having to move from California to Florida. All of that was highly challenging, but challenges are the stuff of character building. And so anytime something comes up and it looks like it might happen, I'm like, oh, that's terrifying. It's like, no, that's just another challenge. And I'm always available for school from my teacher, capital T, teacher in the sky. I'm always available. Teacher in the universe, teacher in the multiverse, teacher in the space between the the subatomic particles. I wanted to get in on that because I always speak, when the times I've done this before, I've always shared so much about the beginning and how I got to be a stoner that I forget to share the gifts and the lessons. So that's what it's like now. What it's like now is, compared to having to choose between continuing to smoke weed and be homeless or having a place to live, I now have a house that I own and a car that's new enough to drive that I never worry about it, and enough funds that I can always pay for the maintenance on that vehicle, and I can buy things if I want to, but I'm already so well trained at being super, super thrifty and finding my way around poverty that I don't spend too much money. So I have money in the bank. I have savings bonds. I mean, that's adulting beyond what I ever thought I would have. Owning a house, savings bonds, I don't know who I am. But but I was willing to go there because I'm at the age that matches those things. And, you know, life is going to be starting to do a sunset job on me. And I'm not, even though I live in Florida and I live in a 55-plus community and everybody's a good 20 years older than me, I'm the youngest person in here, I get to watch these people be old, and I can look at them and see, wow, you know, they were teenagers once, they were in their 20s once, and I see them get sicker and old, and I see the lot die. It's just what happens here. And at first I was so resistant to being with these people because I was in Venice, California, where everybody's a 15-year-old skateboarder. I'm like, that, you know, everybody being 85 is a shock. But I still see the being within. It's still all the same. It's still all just learning to discover that you're a soul and that this life thing, this is very temporary. It's very short. It really is, to me, a school. And I think that those of us who have tried to escape school so much that we were willing to ingest chemicals and toxins and pollute our bodies, that it was destroying our lives and our relationships, I think we're incredibly fortunate that we went so far the wrong way, that we had nothing to do but surrender. Because to me, surrender is the answer for everybody, not just addicts, not just alcoholics, but surrender to whatever it is that created this experience. I think the human, what do they say, we're not humans having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. I think these spiritual beings having human experience, I think that's just one of maybe countless kinds of adventures that a spiritual being like myself will go through. I have no idea what the other schools look like, but I bet you it's not just this. And so I'm not, you know, I'm not afraid of death. I don't think I ever really was. I just feel like I'm kind of more like I'm a little jealous of the people who got there before me because they know something I don't know. You know, they got to experience the big transition, and maybe it's not so big. I've heard people say, I think Ram Dass said it. I think he said, if you live your life like you're in heaven, then death is a non-event. I'm like, yeah, yep. That's kind of where I go. So meditation was my guru. The being taught to surrender, to complete deep, utter silence and drop down deeper into my inner being such that I reach an infinite point of, you know, there's no difference between the empty space within me to the empty space to the farthest reaches of the multiverse. There's no difference between that space. And then dropping the idea that I'm a person with a name in the story, drop all of that and just be that one space, then I really am the whole thing. And we're all the whole thing. And nobody's a stranger. It's all one field of energy. I can really get there and I really see it. And when things challenge me, that stuff becomes obviously the truer portion of reality, the truer expression, the truer conception of what really is going on. And these other little things like, oh, you have a house that's going to blow down in a hurricane, that's, you know, it's nothing. This house is going to be gone in 100 years anyway. And, you know, it's temporal, it's just a human thing. I know I'm kind of blabbering and running on. Where am I in time? 8:32. I'll give it like a 5-minute wrap up. Let's see if I can think of anything that has to be said in 5 minutes. I'm super grateful, super grateful to the meetings that I've fallen in love with and the people that I look up to in those meetings. One of them is a Zoom meeting of what was my home group back in California. It met every day at 7:30 a.m. in a Zen meditation hall. And it has the most amazing format I've ever experienced in a 12-step program. You go in, you know, spend as much time as you want drinking coffee, whatever, and when the time for the meetings start, most people are sitting down on the bamboo floor on cushions in meditation position. Some are in chairs because that's more comfortable for folks. And it's very peaceful. And you start with a little meditation, and then you do some readings, and then you do some prayers, and then you do a 20-minute meditation, and then the shares for 20 minutes, and then some more silent meditation, and then you pray out. And that being a daily practice with people who have, you know, 30 and 40 years and longer of sobriety, and listening to those people and watching them be peaceful and be graceful and be generous with their souls, with their spirit, and be humble. Watching all of that gave me the blueprint of how to proceed, that they had what I wanted. And those people, thank God for the pandemic, because when I first moved here, I really didn't want to come and I hated it. This is where I grew up, the same town where I grew up as a kid. And I didn't hate it then. I just wanted to see the real world. And to me, LA felt like the real world and where culture was made. But if it was going to kill me, maybe it wasn't the real world for me. And so coming back here was really, I resisted. My dreams every night where I was back in LA, and it was so hard to wake up in a weird world every single day. Eventually that wore away, and then the pandemic hit and they couldn't meet in person anymore, and they went on Zoom, and now I get to sit with them every day again. I mean, who could have seen any of that coming? The miracles that land so far outweigh any of the grievances I might have about what it is to exist. And there, just in case I didn't say enough about how it was in the beginning, I was suicidal. And I had no vision of where life could go beyond, it just is only going to be this bad or worse, so it has to end. And surrendering the forward motion of my being to something other than me led me to a life that I couldn't have even imagined. So I will end with that and ask that any newcomer, please consider, you don't know what you don't know. So don't give up. Okay, thank you.